Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, April 1st. So love him for it or hate him for it, President Joe Biden's infrastructure plan unveiled yesterday isn't just about infrastructure. It's also about climate. It's also about unions. It's also about family. And it's also about restoring some kind of economic balance after decades of the concentration of wealth in this country run amok. Here's Biden from his rollout speech yesterday, just saying it out loud.
We all will do better when we all do well. It's time to build our economy from the bottom up and from the middle out, not the top down. That hadn't worked very well. For the economy overall, it hadn't worked. Because Wall Street didn't build this country. You, great middle class, built this country. And unions built the middle class. And it's time. And this time, when we rebuild the middle class, we're going to bring everybody along, regardless of your background, your color, your religion, no matter. Everybody gets to come along. So today, I'm proposing a plan for the nation that rewards work, not just rewards wealth. It builds a fair economy that gives everybody a chance to succeed, and it's going to create the strongest, most resilient, innovative economy in the world.
President Biden yesterday. We've got a couple of more clips to play that I think are also very interesting and even philosophically revealing, and we'll get to those. And with me now is Politico economics correspondent Megan Casella. Her article is called Biden Looks for an Infrastructure Win Where Obama and Trump Failed. Megan, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Your lead line says Biden will try to turn a long-running Washington punchline into a legacy-defining policy achievement. Why do you call infrastructure a long-running Washington punchline?
Well, we all lived through the Trump administration, and I think, you know, we heard over and over again that it was infrastructure week. In the beginning, we thought it was really going to happen. We were going to see some infrastructure plans. Then it started to become a punchline when the Trump administration wanted to change the narrative and distract from something else that was going on. We thought we might get an infrastructure week then. And of course, it never happened. So now, you know, despite all the jokes about infrastructure week for years and years, now we may well have, I'd say, at least an infrastructure year, if not longer.
The clip we just played from near the beginning of the speech cast some shade on Wall Street, right, and some love on unions, and says that building the economy from the top down as opposed to from the bottom up and from the middle out doesn't work. So how much is Biden laying out a restructuring of the economy or a redistribution of wealth after decades of it being redistributed from most people to the top few percent?
That's definitely part of this plan. It's interesting how under the infrastructure umbrella, Biden has really found a way to touch on a number of his broader priorities, and one of them being a more redistributive tax policy and redistributing wealth and tackling income inequality. And I actually think we will continue to see him address that through the second part of this plan that we expect to be rolled out in a couple of weeks that will include more pay-fors and we expect other sorts of tax hikes as well. This one focuses just on corporate tax hikes. And so that's how he'll pay for this. They say even though they're spending the money over 8 years, they will get it back through revenue raisers over 15. So not exactly a equal 10-year plan as we're used to seeing, but over 15 years, at least it would raise the money back by raising taxes on corporations. And, you know, it's a way of you know, finding something that at least most Democrats, if not all Democrats, should be able to rally around. And it touches on that priority that he just spoke about, you know, as you said, casting shade on Wall Street and making sure the biggest companies pay their fair share, as he says.
Politically, do you think he's going after the white working class and white middle class, part of which is a very Republican constituency, by offering something and coupling it with a certain kind of sense of grievance, you know, against Wall Street and the top few percent? Because let's face it, Trump got elected partly on running to a white working class on grievance against elites, and the Democrats do it too. They do it in their way.
They do. It's an interesting question and a really interesting point, and something that I think we'll see become a theme throughout Biden's term. You know, in some ways, this is a way that he can look to try to win back some of those Trump voters, people who had been Democrats their entire life, the blue collar workers who then found something in Trump that resonated with them and switched parties that way. At the same time, this is also something that Joe Biden has really, you know, championed his entire career in terms of blue collar workers, pro-union. You know, he's little Joe from Scranton, and he went to Pittsburgh yesterday for this speech. So he's clearly really trying to amp up that theme. And you know, the other aspect too is that the White House, in designing this plan, did it in a pretty shrewd way, in where they're clearly looking for bipartisanship here. So most of the things that are going to be, many of the things that are going to be the most controversial, I should say, are saved for that second plan. And that's, you know, tax hikes on individuals, that's investments more in the what they're calling a care infrastructure, where, you know, there's some pushback that it's not quite infrastructure. There's some of that in this first plan, but much of it is saved for roads and bridges and transit, that physical infrastructure. It's broadband access, it's access to clean water. And so these are sort of the things where they're really hoping for bipartisanship, at least from some moderate Republicans or from those white working class voters, as you mentioned, who are probably, or at least the White House hopes, they will look at this plan and say, I agree that we should have more roads and bridges. I agree that the biggest companies should pay more in taxes. And so there's a lot to like here.
You mentioned a couple of times already, Megan, that there's a part one to this bill and a part two. And Biden said, this one, the one he talked about yesterday, which he's framing around jobs, is the first half. He'll unveil the second half later this month, which is built around the idea of family. So tell us more about what that part will include and how family and infrastructure become part of the same thing.
We don't know exactly what's in it yet, but there's widespread expectation it will include efforts to make the expanded child tax credit permanent, or at least to extend it for several more years. That's a step that was first taken in the American Rescue Plan that was just passed. They expanded it, but just for 1 year. So there's efforts to make that permanent. There's discussion about universal pre-K, about making community college tuition free, and much more investment in terms of families. There's likely to be something on paid leave, on, you know, more on childcare. And so it really is, you know, they've sort of alternated what they're calling this. I think they're going to call it the American Families Plan. They focus on the care infrastructure or human infrastructure. And that's really their point there, is that in order for society to run better, not only do we need better roads and bridges that are more sustainable, to big storms, for example, and create jobs that way, but for example, you know, one thing that's been a big priority for the White House is getting women back to work. You can't get women back to work in a major way unless we do fix and invest in our childcare system. We know that from looking at the jobs data that women have dropped out of the labor force. So Elizabeth Warren actually was one of the first people to really start championing or you know, repeating the line, childcare is infrastructure. And so that's what we're going to see in that second plan, is a lot of pushes for things that really help people in their homes and in their daily lives, and framing it as infrastructure in part because it's one way of emphasizing, you know, this is something that the country needs in order to run better. They'll get some pushback on that. They're already getting that even in the first aspect of this plan, that it's too broad. It doesn't just touch on physical infrastructure as we picture it, roads and bridges, but that's at least the argument they will be making.
The $2 trillion price tag we're hearing, is that just for the jobs portion or for the whole thing?
That's just for the jobs portion. So the second portion is likely to be in the trillions as well. We don't know exactly what the price tag will be yet.
Wow. And even at that, there's pushback from the left. You quote AOC in your article saying that this is too small. It doesn't go far enough. And we'll get to that. But let me take a call. Will in Jersey City. You're on WNYC with Megan Casella, who covers economics in the Biden administration for Politico. Hi, Will.
Good morning. I would like to know, in this proposal, what specifically does the president propose to strengthen unions? I'm a member of the teachers union here in New Jersey, so I'm curious to hear specifically what proposal is he making to strengthen.
Will, thank you. Yeah, and we mentioned that in the clip that we played at the top, he particularly shouted out, you know, some love for unions. So are there provisions in here that would strengthen unions? And Will said he's in the teachers union. The the public sector unions, including teachers' unions, are fairly strong relative to the private sector, where they shriveled so much. So in general, and with particular respect to private sector unions, is there anything in this bill to strengthen them?
There is. The most significant of which is that it will include in this bill the PRO Act that the House has been pushing. The PRO Act is an acronym for Protecting the Right to Organize. And so if Congress went ahead and passed this bill just the way that Biden proposed it, it would include that bill. That makes it easier for workers to form unions. It extends collective bargaining rights to independent contractors. And most people I talk to about that bill say, you know, this would really revamp unions across the country by just filling out their ranks, making it so that many, many more workers can join unions and then strengthening them and strengthening their rights and their power across the country.
Interesting. So on the question of tax hikes, here's another clip of Biden from the speech.
Here's what I do. I start with one rule. No one, let me say it again, no one making under $400,000 will see their federal taxes go up, period. This is not about penalizing anyone. I have nothing against millionaires and billionaires. I believe American capitalism. I want everyone to do well. But here's the deal. Right now, a middle-class couple, a firefighter and a teacher, with two kids making a combined salary of, say, $110,000, $120,000 a year, pays 22 cents for each additional dollar they earn in federal income tax. But a multinational corporation that builds a factory abroad, brings it home and sells it, they pay nothing at all.
Biden yesterday. So, Megan, do you have enough of the fine print to fact check that yet? Because I imagine Republicans will argue that there are tax hikes for people making less than $400,000, depending on how you define tax hikes. Yes?
Right. So what's interesting is that they're already, you know, or I guess Biden's continuing to emphasize that he won't raise taxes on anyone making less than $400,000. In this first plan, we only know they're only proposing corporate tax hikes in the first version. So we don't even have the fine print yet to start to parse. We widely expect there to be some personal income tax hikes in the second round because they'll need another round of pay fors or, you know, ways to pay for that plan. So that may well include raising the personal income tax rate, the top personal income tax rate that would affect the wealthiest Americans. That may well include increasing the capital gains tax or the estate tax, or Biden's a fan of something called the stepped up basis, which affects wealthy heirs and, you know, whether they'll have to pay taxes when that money is passed down to the next generation. All of that likely will affect the wealthiest Americans. We don't know enough yet to know exactly how it'll be structured or who will be affected. Right now, all he's proposing for this first round is just to raise the corporate tax rate.
Listener on Twitter writes, I love the opportunities for jobs. I did not see opportunities for offering training for good infrastructure jobs, plumbing, electric, green energy, etc., for Black, brown, low-income community members and union membership opportunities. Are things like that in there?
That's an interesting question. I also have not seen much on training. That's not to say it's not in there, but the emphasis really here is on the jobs themselves. But on the note, the point on making opportunities available for Black and brown communities, there are several provisions in here that do note that they want to make sure that some, you know, some portion of the investments, 40% in some places, or, you know, certain proportions of those investments are going to disadvantaged communities, low-income communities. In the research section, there's some money preserved for HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities. And so that's one of those overarching Biden priorities that we do see a little bit reflected here, is narrowing income inequality, racial inequality, and that sort of thing.
We have people like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, as you quote in your article, and others on the left, saying that the Biden infrastructure bill doesn't go far enough in terms of size. What do they want?
They want much more in terms of investment, and a big focus for Ocasio-Cortez and others is on climate, that many of these climate groups have been requesting or suggesting $10 trillion in spending over 10 years on climate alone. This Biden plan that encompasses some climate investments as well is just over $2 trillion over 8 years. So it's not even close to what they've been asking for. Other groups have a smaller ask, but they want about $4 trillion on climate and labor over 4 years. So of course, everybody just wants more money here. And one of the reasons that this has become such a flashpoint and there's been so much lobbying and so much emphasis and focus on making sure that different priorities are reflected and reflected adequately here is that there's widespread concern and sort of the conventional wisdom in Washington is that the Democrats will only get one more chance this year to pass a bill through reconciliation, meaning they don't need Republican votes. And that because of how tightly how narrow the Democrats' majorities are, they only have 3 votes to lose in the House and none in the Senate, that because of the way things are, those political dynamics, they won't get another chance after that to pass possibly anything else before the midterms when the incumbent president's party tends to not do so well. So Democrats feel like they only have possibly one more shot to get anything done in this Congress. And so everybody really wants to pile on and make sure their priorities are reflected.
And also on the climate aspects of the bill, you note that it includes a call to end fossil fuel subsidies. Do we as taxpayers still subsidize the mega profitable fossil fuel companies?
We do. It's one of the things that progressive Democrats in particular have been calling for so long that now they're labeling it often the bare minimum. Like the least we can do is stop subsidizing these companies. And that is something that Biden's proposing to do in this plan. It's obviously such a flashpoint because it really angers oil and gas companies and lawmakers who are close with those companies will, of course, maybe have a hard time voting for something that ends those subsidies and close other loopholes and so forth that they benefit from. So it will be interesting to see if that becomes sort of a flashpoint or a central point of debate on Capitol Hill. We'll have to see.
I know you got to go in a minute. I want to play one more clip because one of the lines from Biden's speech that you quote in your article is, if we act now, in 50 years, people are going to look back and say this was the moment that America won the future. And here's an aspect of that. We've talked on the show before about how Biden has a long relationship with China's leader, Xi Jinping, and how President Xi seems to genuinely argue that democracy doesn't work. Too much political gridlock to really move a country forward in the public interest. So beyond the nuts and bolts of roads and bridges and environmental sustainability, Biden yesterday cited this.
I truly believe we're in a moment where history is going to look back on this time as a fundamental choice having been made between democracies and autocracies. You know, there's a lot of autocrats in the world who think the reason why they're going to win is democracies can't reach consensus any longer. Autocracies do. That's what competition between America and China and the rest of the world is all about. It's a basic question. Can democracies still deliver for their people? Can they get a majority? I believe we can. I believe we must.
Democracy versus autocracy is at stake, and Megan, the president, used that argument to put pressure on Republicans to give them some bipartisan buy-in to show democracy can work.
He sure did. And so I think it's, you know, it's part of what I mentioned at the start of the White House clearly designed this proposal with trying to get bipartisan support for it, trying to get some Republicans on board. And that pitch yesterday was part of that. He's really appealing to the idea of one, you know, we often hear the statistic that we're now 13th in the world for infrastructure as one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We should not be so low and that we can do better. It's sort of an appeal to patriotism in a way and the can-do American spirit. It's also, you know, competitiveness a little bit and just, you know, we need better roads and bridges. It's something that everybody can see in their own communities. And so at its core, even though there's so much else in this bill at its core, that's going to be a main focus of it as well. So, you know, as the other part being that one of the reasons we haven't done this in so long, there you can debate when exactly was the last time we had such an investment in the country's infrastructure. But often I hear that it was the 1950s under President Dwight Eisenhower was the last time we really devoted so much money in terms of the size and the scope of this plan to infrastructure. So it's been so long because democracies aren't good at implementing something like this, aren't good, as Biden said, at agreeing on how to move forward. And so that's sort of what he's trying to emphasize here as well, to get some Republicans on board.
Yeah, and investment, which you just used, is such a key word, because he would argue that if this costs $2 trillion, or with part two coming along, $4 trillion, that's not expenditure. That's simply going to increase the debt and threaten people's 401ks, like one of the callers was worried about, at least in Biden's argument. This is an investment that, just like cutting taxes on the rich from the Republican side, they say, well, that doesn't decrease government spending, government revenue, though it does. It ultimately comes out in more because it grows the economy. This is what Biden is arguing for, this kind of spending. Ultimately, it's an investment that's going to grow the economy, not shrink it. And debate engaged. Day one of the infrastructure plan debate in Washington. Megan Casella covers economics for Politico. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.